The astropathic distress call from Herodian 4 reached Macrag in fragments, corrupted and disjointed. Static-laced messages described unidentified bioforms in the northern archipelago. The planetary governor's request for aid contained peculiar gaps, unexplained delays between transmissions. Command deemed it worthy of investigation nonetheless. Our deployment was swift. The Ultramarines 4th Company, 100 Battle Brothers strong, made planetfall 36 hours after receiving the distress signal. I watched from the Thunderhawk's viewport as we descended through Herodian's cloud cover, the world's vast oceans and scattered island chains coming into view. Captain Ageman had placed me, Sergeant Valeris, in charge of coordinating with the local defense forces upon arrival. The capital city of New Carthage gleamed under the morning sun, its spires and hab blocks arranged in the precise geometric patterns favored by imperial urban planners. Nothing appeared amiss from our approach vector. The Planetary Defense Force Honor Guard awaited our arrival at the landing pad, their uniforms immaculate, their formations flawless. Too perfect, perhaps. Something felt wrong from the moment my boots touched the landing platform. The PDF commander's skin appeared waxy, his eyes never quite meeting mine as he described the situation. His report mentioned isolated attacks on remote monitoring stations in the northern archipelago, but lacked the specificity I expected. When I pressed for details about the bioforms mentioned in the astropathic call, he deflected, suggesting we speak with the governor. Captain Ageman dispatched Scout Squad Tarkus to the northern islands while the main force established a command center. The scouts, led by Sergeant Tellian, were veterans of a dozen campaigns against the Tyranid menace. If anyone could identify early signs of infestation, it would be them. The meeting with Planetary Governor Drusus Herodian III proved equally unsatisfying. The man appeared distracted, his explanations for the garbled distress call unconvincing. He claimed atmospheric disturbances had corrupted the transmission, yet the planet's meteorological records showed no such anomalies during the relevant time period. Captain Ageman accepted the explanation with appropriate diplomatic courtesy, but in the privacy of our command center, he ordered heightened vigilance. 3 days passed. Scout Squad Tarkus maintained Vox silence as per their mission parameters, and the waiting gnawed at us all. I spent the time studying the planetary defense grid, noting peculiar gaps in the northern sensor network. When questioned, the PDF commander attributed these to recent storms damaging equipment. The explanation seemed plausible, yet something about his manner, a slight hesitation before answering perhaps, triggered my suspicion. On the fourth day, Scout Squad Tarkus broke Vox silence with a coded burst transmission. The message was brief but chilling, evidence of genestealer infiltration discovered in multiple settlements. The scouts had found hidden chambers beneath government buildings, walls coated with the distinctive resinous secretions of Tyranid organisms. More disturbing, they had observed PDF officers exhibiting subtle physical abnormalities, slightly elongated craniums, and unnatural fluidity of movement. Most damning of all, they had infiltrated the governor's private records and discovered communications dating back 3 standard years, detailing the systematic suppression of reports regarding strange disappearances and unexplained phenomena. The distress call that brought us to Herodian IV had not been sent by the governor at all, but by a loyalist faction within the astropathic choir, subsequently purged for their treasonous actions. Captain Ageman ordered immediate extraction of Scout Squad Tarkus and preparation for orbital bombardment of identified infestation sites. The 4th Company would withdraw to a safe distance, then systematically cleanse the Xeno's corruption from orbit before conducting a more thorough ground campaign. That was when our Vox networks began to fail. First came the distortion, subtle anomalies in transmission clarity, occasional bursts of static. Tech adepts attributed it to solar activity. Then entire frequencies went dark. Our connection to Scout Squad Tarkus vanished mid-transmission. Attempts to contact our strike cruiser, the Sword of Macrag, yielded only fragmented responses. I led a team to the city's primary communications array, suspecting sabotage. What we found confirmed our worst fears. The tech priests attending the array lay dead, their bodies displaying the distinctive wounds of genestealer claws. The equipment itself had been subtly modified, components replaced with biological analogs that mimicked their function while secretly filtering and corrupting transmissions. The trap was closing around us. From the communications tower, I observed the first signs of the coming storm. The northern horizon had darkened unnaturally, clouds swirling in patterns that defied natural weather systems. The atmospheric disturbance expanded southward at an impossible rate, tendrils of vapor reaching toward New Carthage like hungry fingers. Mycetic spores, thousands of them, dispersed high in the atmosphere, creating their own weather system as they descended. Captain Ageman ordered an immediate extraction. The fourth company would regroup at the landing zone and evacuate to the Sword of Makrag. From there, we would implement Codex protocol for dealing with major Tyranid infestations, orbital bombardment followed by targeted strikes against surviving Synapse creatures. We never reached the landing zone. The PDF turned on us halfway there, revealing their true nature. What had appeared to be standard issue las guns concealed bioweapons that fired corrosive spines. Guardsmen shed their human disguises, revealing the distorted forms of gene-stealer hybrids. The ambush was well coordinated, striking from multiple angles simultaneously. Brother Taurinus fell first, a spine penetrating his helmet lens. Brother Meliger's armor dissolved around him where the bio-acid struck, the veteran warrior fighting on even as his protection failed. Captain Ageman formed the company into a defensive ring, bolters blazing as we cut down waves of hybrid attackers. The skies darkened further as we fought our way through the city streets. The spore clouds descended, bringing with them the first wave of Tyranid organisms. Termagants swarmed over barricades, Hormigaunts leapt from rooftops. Warrior forms directed the assault with terrible intelligence, targeting our heavy weapons specialists and officers. We established contact with the Sword of Makrag long enough to learn the truth. The ship's augurs had detected multiple bio-ships emerging from the void on the far side of Herodian IV. Not a splinter fleet, a full tendril of Hive Fleet Kraken had arrived, surrounding the planet in a blockade of living vessels. Our strike cruiser was already under attack by boarding organisms. Captain Ageman made the call that saved some of us, though it damned others. He split the company, ordering tactical squads Trajan and Numitor to secure the governor's palace, where a secondary landing pad might offer extraction. Remaining squads would create a diversion, drawing the main Tyranid force away from our escape route. My squad was assigned to the diversionary force. We fought our way to the city's main generatorium, intending to overload its plasma reactors. The resulting explosion would not only eliminate thousands of Tyranid organisms, but also create a temporary break in the synaptic network, buying time for our brothers to reach extraction. The battle for the generatorium tested us beyond measure. Tyranid warriors led the assault, their enhanced forms adapted for urban warfare. Their carapaces deflected bolter rounds that would have shredded lesser organisms. Their bioweapons spat corrosive acids that melted ceramite and flesh alike. Brother Demetrian lost his arm to a scything talon. Brother Phocas was dragged screaming into a ventilation shaft by something with too many limbs. We held the main chamber long enough for Techmarine Galen to initiate the overload sequence. The machine spirit of the Generatorium resisted, safety protocols fighting our commands. As Galen worked, the rest of us defended the entrances against an ever-growing tide of chitin and claw. The vox crackled to life one final time. Captain Ageman, his voice strained, reported that the secondary extraction had failed. The landing pad had been overrun before squads Trajan and Numitor arrived. The captain had received one last communication from the Sword of Makrag. The ship was lost, its decks crawling with Tyranid organisms. There would be no extraction. We were trapped on a dying world, surrounded by an endless swarm. The Generatorium's warning klaxons blared as the plasma reactors reached critical levels. We had minutes to reach minimum safe distance. Galen sealed the chamber doors, buying us time with his sacrifice. I led the survivors through maintenance tunnels, emerging 2 kilometers from the facility as the sky turned white with plasma fire. The explosion obliterated 8 city blocks, vaporizing countless Tyranid organisms. For a brief moment, the swarm seemed disoriented, the death of so many synapse creatures creating a temporary break in the hive mind's control. We used that window to regroup with the remnants of other squads at an abandoned administratum complex. 43 battle brothers remained from our original 100. Captain Ageman was among them, his armor scorched and dented, one eye clouded with blood. The situation was grim, our ammunition reserves dwindled. Several brothers had sustained wounds that would prove fatal without proper medical attention. The Tyranids controlled the skies, the spaceports, and most of the city. Worse, the brief respite following the Generatorium's destruction had ended. New organisms descended from orbit, larger, more specialized killers. Carnifexes smashed through HAB blocks. Harpies screamed overhead, their sonic calls jamming what remained of our Vox network. Lictors stalked the shadows, picking off isolated warriors. Captain Ageman gathered us in the Administratum's central vault, the room's thick walls offering temporary shelter. The plan he outlined was not one of victory, but of defiance. We would split into small teams, striking at Tyranid synapse creatures wherever possible. We would deny the hive mind the biomass it sought, destroying what we could not defend. And we would send warning to the wider Imperium, using the planet's backup astropathic relay located in a hardened bunker beneath the southern mountains. As night fell over New Carthage, we prepared for what might be our final mission. Outside, the sounds of the hive mind's hunger echoed through empty streets. Chitin scraped against rockcrete. Alien screams pierced the darkness. The shadow of the Great Devourer had fallen upon Herodian IV, and we stood alone against its endless hunger. The night following the destruction of the Generatorium offered little respite. We fortified our position in the Administratum complex, treating the wounded as best we could with dwindling medical supplies. By dawn, Captain Ideas, who had assumed command after Captain Ageman succumbed to his wounds during the night, made a tactical assessment that changed our defensive strategy. The Administratum building was too exposed, its perimeter too vast for our diminished numbers to secure effectively. Through tactical AuSpec scans, we identified a more defensible position 3 kilometers southwest, the Imperial Shrine Complex of St. Drusus. Built 5 centuries ago from solid rockcrete with walls 4 meters thick, the Shrine Complex occupied high ground and offered clear firing lines in all directions. Most importantly, its central basilica contained a reinforced undercroft that might serve as a command center beyond the reach of Tyranid spore mines and bioplasma. We moved at first light, advancing in leapfrog formation through the ruins of New Carthage. The city had transformed overnight. Tyranid organisms had covered entire buildings with glistening, membranous growths. Capillary towers stretched skyward, pulsing with unknown fluids. The streets ran with a viscous slurry of dissolved biomass, the liquefied remains of citizens the Tyranids had already processed. Brother Laelius triggered our first engagement, detecting movement in a collapsed HAB block. A brood of Hormigaunts burst from the rubble, their scything talons gleaming in the early light. We cut them down with disciplined bolter fire, but the noise drew attention. By the time we reached the Shrine Complex, we had fought through 3 more ambushes, losing brothers Nikin and Tarchan to a lurking lictor. The shrine's outer walls had partially collapsed on the eastern face, but the remaining structure proved defensible. Captain Ideas directed our efforts with the precision expected of an ultramarine officer. Devastator squads took positions in the bell towers and along the upper ramparts, their heavy bolters and missile launchers covering all approaches. Tactical squads fortified ground-level entrances, using fallen masonry to create choke points. The few remaining assault marines prepared for rapid response to breaches. I led a squad to secure the shrine's undercroft, finding it mercifully free of Tyranid presence. Ancient statues of Imperial saints stared down from niches in the walls, their stone eyes seeming to judge our desperate circumstances. The undercroft contained an emergency generator and water purification system, both still functional. We would not die of thirst, at least. Brother Garrus, our remaining tech marine, established a defensive perimeter of motion sensors and improvised explosive devices using the shrine's perimeter. With ammunition running low, every bolt round needed to count. The traps would thin the Tyranid numbers before they reached our firing positions. The first waves came at dusk. Termagants by the hundreds, followed by Hormigaunts in warrior forms. They crashed against our defenses like a chitinous tide. Devastator squad Theseus exhausted their heavy bolter ammunition in the first hour, switching to bolters as the bodies piled higher. Brother Kairos, manning the last functional missile launcher, targeted synapse creatures with precision, temporarily disrupting the swarm's cohesion with each successful kill. Throughout the night, the attacks continued in pulses, a Tyranid tactic designed to exhaust defenders. We rotated squads between the frontline and reserve positions, allowing brief periods of rest. The strategy worked until midnight, when a new threat emerged. Ravenna's tunneled beneath our eastern barricade, bypassing our perimeter defenses entirely. They emerged inside our lines, their serpentine bodies lashing in all directions. Brother Achilles fell first, a Ravenna's claws puncturing his backplate before he could turn. Brother Decius emptied his bolter into the creature's face at point-blank range, only to be dragged into the tunnel by a second Ravenna. I led the counterattack with my combat knife when my bolter clicked empty, driving the blade through the softer tissue between the creature's armored plates. The close quarters fighting cost us dearly, 5 battle brothers lost to secure the eastern section once more. By dawn, we had repelled 6 major assaults. The shrine's approaches were carpeted with tyrannid corpses, some still twitching as their synaptic connections faded. 38 battle brothers remained, many nursing wounds sealed with emergency field dressings. Our ammunition situation had become critical. Devastator Squad Theseus reported less than 20% capacity for the remaining heavy weapons. Several battle brothers had resorted to collecting bolters from the dead, carrying 3 or 4 weapons to switch between when one ran dry. Captain Ideus called a tactical assessment in the Undercroft. The defense had held, but we could not sustain another night like the previous one. Our only hope lay in the shrine's ancient Vox array, which Brother Garrus believed could be modified to send a tight beam transmission to any Imperial vessels that might pass through the system. The captain assigned me to protect Garrus while he worked, detailing other squads to reinforce our perimeter and gather what ammunition remained. The day passed in tense preparation. The Tyranids had withdrawn to regroup, giving us precious hours to strengthen barricades and redistribute our dwindling supplies. The absence of attack was almost more unnerving than combat. The hive mind was learning, adapting. I felt its alien intelligence pressing against the edges of my consciousness, probing for weaknesses in our defense. Brother Garrus worked tirelessly on the Vox array, replacing corroded components with parts salvaged from our armor. The work proceeded slowly, the ancient technology resisting his efforts to interface with Astartes equipment. As dusk approached again, he estimated another 6 hours before the array would be operational, hours we might not have. It was during the evening meal cycle that we first noticed something amiss with our supplies. Brother Philo, responsible for our remaining heavy weapon ammunition, reported discrepancies in the inventory. Missiles for the launcher had gone missing. Power cells for plasma weapons showed signs of tampering. Most concerning, several Melta bombs had disappeared entirely. Captain Ideus ordered an immediate security sweep of the shrine complex. I led a team through the eastern wing, finding nothing until we reached a small side chapel. The floor showed signs of recent disturbance, the ancient tiles removed and replaced by inexperienced hands. Beneath them, we discovered a narrow passage that had not appeared on any of the shrine's schematics. The passage led downward, connecting to the city's maintenance tunnels. Fresh scratches on the walls indicated recent use. More disturbing were the traces of a resinous substance I recognized from previous Tyranid encounters, the secretions used to mark territory and communication paths for gene stealers. Someone had been moving between our position and Tyranid-controlled sectors of the city. I was reporting this discovery to Captain Ideus when the shrine's emergency lighting failed. The generator in the Undercroft had gone silent. In the momentary darkness before our armor's auto-senses adjusted, I heard the distinctive sound of claws on stone, not from outside our perimeter, but from within. The truth revealed itself in the worst possible way. The planetary governor and 5 of his senior staff had been evacuated to the shrine complex during our initial defense, claiming to seek sanctuary. We had vetted them with standard protocols, finding nothing amiss. Now in the darkness, they revealed their true nature. 4th-generation gene-stealer hybrids, their mutations subtle enough to escape casual detection, they had been planted among us specifically to sabotage our defenses when we were most vulnerable. The governor himself attacked Captain Ideus, his seemingly frail human arms transforming into chitinous claws that punched through ceramite with horrifying ease. 2 of his aides ambushed Devastator Squad Theseus, neutralizing our heavy weapons specialists before they could bring their bolters to bear. Another hybrid triggered the Melta bombs they had stolen, collapsing the shrine's western wall. Through the breach poured a fresh wave of Tyranid organisms, larger, more specialized killers than the previous night's assault. Carnifexes smashed through what remained of the wall, their massive scything talons sweeping battle brothers aside. Warriors directed the smaller organisms with terrible efficiency, targeting our command structure and remaining heavy weapons with uncanny precision. I rallied the nearest squad, directing concentrated fire against a warrior directing the assault. The creature's head exploded in a spray of ichor, temporarily disrupting the coordination of the gaunts around it. The reprieve lasted seconds before another warrior stepped forward, assuming synaptic control. The fighting devolved into a series of desperate last stands. With our defensive perimeter shattered and heavy weapons sabotaged, we fought with bolters until ammunition ran dry, then with combat knives and bare hands. Brother Marrow detonated his remaining cracked grenades when surrounded, taking six warriors with him. Brother Dion emptied his bolt pistol into a Carnifex's eye socket at point-blank range, temporarily blinding the creature before its talons disemboweled him. Captain Ideus fought his way to the central basilica, rallying the survivors around the ancient statue of Saint Drusus. The captain's armor was heavily damaged, his left arm hanging useless at his side, but he continued directing our defense with unwavering resolve. When a hive tyrant smashed through the basilica's stained glass window, Ideus met the creature with his power sword raised. The duel between captain and tyrant unfolded in terrible splendor. Ideus landed several telling blows, his power sword carving chunks from the creature's carapace. For a moment, it seemed he might prevail through sheer determination. Then the tyrant's bone sword found the gap in his armor beneath the arm, piercing his primary heart. Captain Ideus continued fighting even as his life ebbed, severing one of the tyrant's lower limbs before a second thrust finished him. With the captain's fall, organized resistance collapsed. I led the remaining battle brothers in a fighting retreat toward the Undercroft, where Brother Garrus had barricaded himself to complete work on the Vox Array. We needed to send warning, even if we would not live to see rescue. A thunderous explosion shook the shrine complex. Our Thunderhawk transports, hidden in a maintenance bay beneath the shrine, had been destroyed. The hybrids had been thorough in their sabotage, eliminating any possibility of evacuation. We were truly trapped. By the time we reached the Undercroft, only 27 battle brothers remained from the original 100. Most were wounded, some critically. Our ammunition had been reduced to a handful of bolt rounds per warrior. The shriek of tyranids echoed through the shrine above us, growing closer by the minute. Brother Garrus looked up from the Vox Array, his face grim behind his cracked helmet lens. The modified transmitter was operational, but would require time to align with potential Imperial receivers, time we no longer had. The heavy ceramite door to the Undercroft would not hold against determined Tyranid assault for more than a few minutes. I distributed the remaining ammunition, prioritizing brothers with the clearest sight lines to the door. We arranged ourselves in a defensive half-circle, prepared to sell our lives dearly. The first impacts against the door began, the metal groaning under tremendous pressure. Ravena claws appeared around the edges, working to pry it open. The Undercroft would become our final redoubt, the last stand of the Ultramarines' 4th Company on Herodian IV. As I checked my combat knife's edge and counted my last three bolt rounds, I silently renewed my oath to the Emperor. We would not yield while breath remained in our bodies. The Tyranids would pay for every inch of ground with their alien blood. The buckling door to the Undercroft finally gave way with a shriek of tortured metal. I triggered my last three bolt rounds into the first Tyranid form that squeezed through, a gene stealer with an elongated cranium. The mass reactive shells detonated inside its thorax, spraying viscous ichor across the threshold. For a moment, the opening remained clear. Then Brother Memnon grabbed my shoulder plate, his gauntlet leaving a bloody smear on the ultramarine blue. He pointed toward a weathered stone archway at the rear of the Undercroft, barely visible behind the ancient statue of Saint Drusus. The shrine's original architects had built escape tunnels, catacombs that ran beneath the city, connecting to older imperial structures. Brother Garrus had discovered their existence while modifying the Vox Array, but had been unable to determine their condition or where they led. We had no choice. I signaled the remaining battle brothers to fall back in sequence, covering each other's retreat. Apothecary Theseus collected gene seed from Captain Ideus before joining us, his Narthesium stained with the vitae of too many brothers. 24 Astartes entered those ancient tunnels as the Undercroft filled with Tyranid organisms. The catacombs smelled of age and decay, the air thick with dust undisturbed for centuries. Moisture dripped from cracked stone ceilings, forming shallow puddles on the uneven floor. Our armor's auto senses adjusted to the darkness, revealing corridors that stretched beyond our limited visibility. The walls bore faded imperial aquilas and inscriptions in high Gothic, prayers to the Emperor that had gone unanswered for generations. Brother Garrus took point, his augmetic leg scraping against the stone floor with each step. The damage sustained during the shrine defense had compromised his mobility, but his determination remained undiminished. He consulted a partial schematic downloaded from the shrine's archives, guiding us deeper into the labyrinth. The sounds of pursuit faded behind us as we descended. The tunnels grew narrower, forcing us to advance in single file. The air grew colder, heavy with the scent of wet stone and something else, a faint alien musk that raised the hairs on the back of my neck despite my Astartes conditioning. My enhanced senses detected subtle changes in the tunnel walls, scratch marks too precise to be natural erosion, residual traces of the same resinous substance found in the shrine's hidden passage. We were not the first to discover these catacombs. The wounded struggled to maintain pace. Brother Alexian's armor had been breached at the abdomen, exposing lacerated organs that even his enhanced healing couldn't quickly repair. Brother Demetrios dragged his right leg, the knee joint of his power armor fused by corrosive tyranid bioacid. Apothecary Theseus moved among them, administering what limited care he could with depleted medical supplies. 4 kilometers into the catacombs, we reached a junction where the tunnels split in 3 directions. Brother Garrus consulted his schematic, his expression grim behind his cracked helmet lens. The data was incomplete, showing only partial pathways. We faced a choice without adequate information, precisely the situation the Codex Astartes warned against. Chaplain Cassius, his skull helmet dented and his Crozius Arcanum's power field flickering intermittently, suggested we divide our forces to explore each path. I countermanded the suggestion immediately. Our strength lay in unity, splitting up would only make us easier prey. Instead, I ordered a 5-minute reconnaissance of each tunnel entrance before committing to a direction. The eastern tunnel descended at a steeper angle, its floor slick with moisture. The southern passage remained level but narrowed considerably after 20 meters. The western corridor showed the most promise, wider, with vents that suggested some form of ancient air circulation system still functioned. More importantly, the subtle vibration in the stone suggested proximity to operational machinery, perhaps an emergency power system, or if the Emperor smiled upon us, a functional vox relay. We chose the western path, advancing with weapons ready. The tunnel eventually opened into a larger chamber that might once have served as a command post or security checkpoint. Faded picked screens lined the walls, their surfaces cracked and dark. Ancient cogitator banks stood silent, covered in dust. Brother Garrus moved toward the equipment, his mechadendrites extending to interface with the dormant systems. A sudden stillness descended upon the chamber. The distant drip of water ceased. The subtle vibration in the stone floor vanished. Even the sound of our armor's servo seemed muted, as though the very air absorbed noise. Librarian Epistolary Anatius, the sole surviving psyker among us, stiffened suddenly. His 4 staff's crystals flared with momentary blue light, then dimmed to near darkness. The librarian's warning came too late. From recesses in the ceiling, previously undetected in the gloom, dropped 3 lictors. Their chameleonic carapaces had rendered them nearly invisible against the stonework. The first landed directly on Brother Memnon, its hooked talons puncturing his backplate. The second seized Brother Theron, lifting the struggling Astartes toward a secondary mouth filled with needle teeth. The third landed before me, its feeder tendrils writhing in anticipation. We reacted with the speed expected of the Emperor's finest. My combat knife found the junction between the lictor's thorax plates, driving deep into the creature's equivalent of a nervous system. Brother Garrus triggered a shoulder-mounted Melta weapon, one of his last functioning armaments, and vaporized the head of the lictor attacking Brother Theron. Chaplain Cassius smashed his Crozius into the third creature's limb joints, the weapon's failing power field still strong enough to crack the reinforced chitin. The fight lasted 17 seconds. All 3 lictors lay dead, but Brothers Memnon and Theron had been fatally wounded. Brother Memnon's primary heart had been pierced, while the toxins from the lictor's feeder tendrils had already begun dissolving Brother Theron's internal organs. Apothecary Theseus worked quickly to extract their gene seed, while Chaplain Cassius intoned the ritual words of the Emperor's peace. 22 Astartes remained. The presence of lictors confirmed our worst fears. The Tyranids had already infiltrated the catacombs, perhaps days or weeks earlier. We were traversing territory the enemy had already scouted and marked. The psychological impact of this realization affected even our conditioned minds. Space Marines knew no fear, this was the chapter's truth. Yet what I felt as we continued deeper into those tunnels transcended mere tactical concern. It was a primordial response, buried beneath layers of hypno-indoctrination and genetic modification, yet undeniably present. We advanced with heightened vigilance, checking every shadow, every ceiling recess, every side passage. Brother Garrus worked to restore power to sections of the ancient complex, bypassing damaged conduits and rerouting energy from his own armor's power pack when necessary. Lights flickered to life in sequence as we progressed, illuminating a path unused by human feet for centuries. The catacombs eventually led to a larger complex, an underground installation that predated the shrine above by perhaps a millennium. The architecture suggested early Mechanicus influence, with vaulted ceilings supported by columns inscribed with binary cant. Ancient machinery hummed with residual power, cogitator banks displaying fragmentary data and machine code too, degraded for even Brother Garrus to fully decipher. Librarian Anatius identified the facility as a monitoring station, possibly established during the initial colonization of Herodian IV. More importantly, he detected energy signatures consistent with a long-range Vox array, precisely what we needed to contact any Imperial forces that might enter the system. If Brother Garrus could restore functionality, we might yet warn the Imperium of the extent of the Tyranid infestation. The librarian's psychic abilities proved both blessing and curse. His enhanced perception detected the Vox array's energy signature, but also sensed the approaching Tyranid organisms with terrible clarity. The hive mind's synaptic network extended through the catacombs like an invisible web, each strand vibrating with alien hunger. Worse, that same network had detected Anatius's psychic presence, focusing the swarm's attention on our location with unerring precision. We had perhaps 30 minutes before the main Tyranid force reached us. I ordered immediate defensive preparations while Brother Garrus worked on the Vox array. We deployed the few remaining functional weaponry at key choke points. Brothers with damaged ranged weapons fashioned improvised spears from broken machinery and scavenged Tyranid chitin, the talon of a fallen lictor bound to a metal rod made an effective, if primitive, weapon. Chaplain Cassius moved among us, his words strengthening resolve where doubt had begun to take root. His skull helm, symbol of the Emperor's judgment, reminded us of our purpose even in these desperate circumstances. We would not die cowering in darkness. We would stand as Ultramarines had stood for 10,000 years, defiant against the enemies of mankind. The first wave hit the outermost defensive position 23 minutes later. Hormigaunts poured through the tunnel entrance, their chitinous forms illuminated by muzzle flashes as brothers Chiron and Patroclus emptied their last bolt magazines into the advancing swarm. When ammunition failed, they switched to combat knives, fighting with the precision drilled into every Astartes from initiation. Brother Chiron fell first, overwhelmed by sheer numbers. Three Hormigaunts pinned him against the wall while a fourth drove talons through his gorget, severing his primary arteries. Brother Patroclus lasted 17 seconds longer, decapitating two of the creatures before a scything talon severed his right arm at the elbow. He continued fighting left-handed until a warrior's bioplasma dissolved his helmet and the flesh beneath. The defensive perimeter contracted as we fell back toward the Vox array chamber. Power armor systems began to fail under sustained damage. Brother Alexian's auto-senses malfunctioned, leaving him fighting blind until Chaplain Cassius guided him by physical contact. Brother Demetrios's power pack sputtered and died, rendering his armor an impediment rather than an asset. He shed the heavier components, fighting in partial plate, his movements faster but his protection critically compromised. Librarian Anatius used his remaining psychic strength to mask our biosignatures from the hive mind, creating psychic echoes that confused the Tyranid synapse creatures. The effort visibly drained him, blood trickling from his eyes and nose with each pulse of power. his four staff's crystals dimmed with each exertion, the psychically reactive material responding to his diminishing strength. In the Vox chamber, Brother Garrus worked with desperate efficiency. His mechadendrites interfaced with ancient systems, bypassing damaged components and rerouting power. The array hummed to life, its machine spirit responding to the Techmarine's ministrations after centuries of dormancy. A directional antenna deployed from a concealed housing in the ceiling, aligning itself toward the system's mandrel point where Imperial ships would emerge from the warp. The message Brother Garrus prepared was succinct: planetary coordinates, Tyranid classification, estimated Hive fleet strength, and a warning to enact exterminatus rather than attempt ground deployment. He included authentication codes that would verify the transmission's Astartes origin. The message began cycling on all Imperial frequencies, a repeating cry for attention in the void. Our defense contracted further as Tyranid numbers increased. Genestealers joined the assault, their specialized close combat adaptations proving devastating in the confined tunnels. Three more brothers fell in quick succession, their gene seed harvested by Apothecary Theseus in increasingly desperate circumstances. The apothecary himself sustained a severe wound to his chest, the reinforced Narthesium housing cracked by a genestealer's claws. With ranged weapons exhausted and power armor failing, we relied increasingly on improvised weapons and unarmed combat techniques. I found myself fighting with a makeshift spear fashioned from a warrior's severed talon, the chitin edge sharp enough to penetrate the softer tissues between Tyranid armor plates. Brother Garrus repurposed components from his damaged servo arm into a crude flamethrower, its promethium reserve sufficient for three short bursts that temporarily cleared the chamber entrance. 17 Astartes remained when Librarian Anatius proposed our final, desperate strategy. The emergency beacon station, our original destination, lay approximately 2 kilometers deeper in the complex, according to partial schematics recovered from the monitoring station's cogitators. If we could reach it, the beacon's power signature would be strong enough to attract any Imperial vessel within several light years. More importantly, the station's construction suggested hardened defenses that might withstand Tyranid assault long enough for the message to be received. The path to the beacon station would take us through the narrowest sections of the catacombs, passages where even individual Astartes would need to advance in single file. Tyranid organisms would face the same constraints, neutralizing their numerical advantage at key choke points. The librarian offered to remain behind with 3 volunteers, using his remaining psychic strength to mask our withdrawal and create the impression that all surviving Astartes remained in the Vox chamber. I refused to leave brothers behind without attempting to bring them with us. Instead, I proposed a fighting retreat, with Librarian Anatius using measured psychic bursts to confuse the Tyranid advance while we fell back in echelon formation. The strategy would strain his reserves to breaking point, but might allow all surviving Astartes to reach the beacon station. The retreat began as Tyranids breached the chamber's secondary entrance. We withdrew in fire teams of 3, each group covering the next as they fell back. Brother Garrus led the way, his partial schematics providing guidance through the labyrinthine passages. Chaplain Cassius took rearguard, his Crozius claiming 3 more genestealer lives before its power field failed completely, reducing it to an ornate but conventional mace. The tunnels narrowed as predicted, forcing us to crawl through certain sections. Power armor scraped against stone, the noise drawing pursuit despite Librarian Anatius's psychic misdirection. In the confined space, damaged auto-senses created new hazards. Brother Theseus nearly impaled himself on a stalactite when his helmet display failed, showing open space where solid rock protruded. 1 kilometer from the Vox chamber, we encountered the first evidence that our destination might offer salvation. Imperial aquilas appeared with increasing frequency on the tunnel walls, more recent than the ancient markings we had passed earlier. Mechanica symbols indicated power conduits and data transmission networks still potentially operational. Most encouraging, we detected faint but unmistakable energy signatures ahead, active power sources rather than the residual energy of dying systems. The beacon station existed. Whether we would reach it before the Tyranids overwhelmed us remained uncertain. Behind us, the sounds of pursuit grew louder, punctuated by the distinctive shriek of genestealers frustrated by the narrow tunnels that slowed their advance. Ahead lay darkness and the promise of a signal that might save not us, but those who would come after. I checked my makeshift spear's integrity as we advanced deeper into the catacombs. The chitin edge had begun to dull, but would serve for a few more kills. My armor systems reported critical failures in multiple subsystems, autosenses operating at 30% capacity, power pack reserves below 15%, life support compromised but functional. 17 Astartes, reduced from 100, continued the desperate advance toward a fragile hope of Imperial response. The weight of Herodian IV pressed down upon us, kilometers of rock separating us from the sky we would never see again. In that crushing darkness, illuminated only by failing armor lumens and the occasional energy discharge from Librarian Anatius's force staff, we moved forward one step at a time, each meter gained a victory against the Great Devourer. The living tunnel throbbed around us, its walls pulsing with an unnatural rhythm that mimicked a massive heartbeat. What had once been rockcrete and stone had transformed into something organic, a digestive tract of the hive mind itself. The transition had been gradual, almost imperceptible at first. Patches of resinous growth had given way to fully biomechanical structures that glistened with moisture in the dim light of our failing armor lumens. Seven of us remained. Seven ultramarines from an original force of 100, our armor cracked and failing, power levels critically low, reduced to fighting with combat knives and improvised weapons. The gene seed of our fallen brothers weighed heavily in Apothecary Theseus's storage unit, 93 gene seed capsules harvested in increasingly desperate circumstances. The tunnel narrowed ahead, forcing us into single file. I took point, my combat knife held in a reverse grip, its monomolecular edge dulled from repeated contact with Tyranid Chitin. Behind me came Librarian Anatius, his psychic reserves nearly depleted, using his force staff more as a walking aid than a weapon. Techmarine Darian followed, his remaining mechadendrite sparking intermittently. Apothecary Theseus, Brother Kyrian, Brother Memnon, and Brother Valerius formed our rearguard, each moving with the careful precision of warriors conserving their final reserves of strength. Our Auspex readings indicated the emergency beacon station lay approximately 300 meters ahead, through a section of tunnel that had become almost completely assimilated by Tyranid biomatter. The soft, yielding floor made each step treacherous. Twice I nearly lost my footing when the surface shifted beneath me, the tunnel itself seeming to react to our presence. The sounds of pursuit grew louder behind us. The distinctive chittering of hormigons echoed through the passages, punctuated by the heavier footfalls of warrior forms directing the hunt. Our trail of blood, impossible to conceal with so many wounds among us, made tracking effortless for the swarm. Librarian Anatius stumbled, his armor's power supply finally giving out. The weight of his plate became an encumbrance rather than protection. Without a word, Brother Memnon moved forward to support him, taking the librarian's weight despite his own grievous wounds. The Brotherhood of Astartes manifested itself in these small acts of sacrifice, each of us willing to expend our last energy to ensure the others continued. The tunnel widened suddenly into a chamber that might once have been a security checkpoint. Ancient Imperial equipment lay scattered about, partially absorbed by the Tyranid growth that covered every surface. Ahead, a heavy bulkhead door stood partially open, its mechanisms fused in position. Beyond it, energy readings indicated active power sources. The beacon station was within reach. The gap in the bulkhead was narrow, wide enough for an unarmored human to pass through comfortably, but a tight squeeze for an Astartes in power armor. We would need to pass through one at a time, creating a dangerous bottleneck. I signaled for the others to hold position while I assessed the opening. As I approached the bulkhead, movement caught my enhanced peripheral vision. A shadow detached itself from the ceiling, a lictor, its chameleonic carapace having rendered it nearly invisible against the organic growth. Its talons descended toward my helmet, the specialized killing limbs moving with terrible precision. I rolled forward, the talons missing my head by millimeters. My combat knife found the creature's leg joint as I came up from the roll, severing the limb in a spray of ichor. The lictor shrieked, the sound amplified by the enclosed space. It lashed out with its remaining talons, catching my shoulder guard and tearing it free. Brother Kyrian charged forward, his own knife driving into the lictor's thorax. The creature's barbed tail whipped around, puncturing Kyrian's backplate and emerging through his primary heart. Even mortally wounded, my battle brother maintained his grip, twisting the knife deeper as his life ebbed away. I recovered my stance and drove my knife into the lictor's head, finding the nerve cluster that controlled its motor functions. The creature collapsed, its limbs twitching in death spasms. Brother Kyrian fell beside it, blood pooling beneath his armor. Apothecary Theseus moved to extract his gene seed, working with practiced efficiency despite his exhaustion. 6 Astartes remained. The commotion had accelerated our pursuers' advance. Scrabbling sounds from the tunnel indicated the first wave of Hormigaunts would reach us within minutes. We needed to pass through the bulkhead immediately. I squeezed through first, armor scraping against metal, ceramic plates catching on the uneven edges. Once through, I took up a defensive position to cover the others. Librarian Anatius came next, his slighter build allowing him to pass more easily despite his failing strength. Apothecary Theseus followed, the precious gene seed containers secured to his armor, making his passage more difficult. Brother Memnon had just begun to squeeze through when the first Hormigaunts reached the chamber. Techmarine Darian and Brother Valerius turned to face them, combat knives ready. The Tyranid organisms swarmed forward, their scything talons glinting in the dim light. Techmarine Darian reached into a compartment of his armor and withdrew a small, cylindrical object, his last reserve of Prometheum, intended for his servo arms welding attachment. He nodded to Brother Valerius, a silent communication between warriors who had fought side by side for decades. Brother Valerius hesitated only momentarily before continuing through the bulkhead, understanding the Techmarine's intent. As Brother Memnon cleared the opening, Techmarine Darian triggered his makeshift incendiary device. The Prometheum ignited, creating a wall of flame between him and the advancing Tyranids. The fire would not stop them for long, but it would buy precious seconds for us to reach the beacon station. Through the flames, I watched Darian wade into the mass of Hormigaunts, his knife claiming 3 more kills before he disappeared beneath a tide of chitin and talon. 5 Astartes now. We advanced through a short corridor that opened into the beacon station itself. The chamber was circular, approximately 30 meters in diameter, with a central control pedestal surrounded by power generators and transmission equipment. Much of the technology remained operational, preserved by ancient stasis fields and redundant systems designed to function for millennia without maintenance. Librarian Anatius moved immediately to the control pedestal, his knowledge of Archaeotech allowing him to decipher the activation sequence. The rest of us established a defensive perimeter, facing the corridor through which we had entered. It was our only avenue of retreat, but also the only approach the Tyranids could use to reach us. The beacon hummed to life, energy coursing through conduits that had lain dormant for centuries. A hololithic display flickered above the pedestal, showing system status and transmission strength. The signal would reach far beyond the Herodian system, alerting any Imperial vessels to the Tyranid presence. More importantly, it would transmit the data we had gathered, hive fleet composition, adaptation patterns, and the extent of planetary infestation, information that might save other worlds even if Herodian IV was lost. The flames in the corridor died down. Through the dissipating smoke came the first wave of Tyranid organisms, not Hormigaunts this time, but gene stealers, their specialized close combat adaptations making them ideal for the confined space. Behind them loomed the massive form of a warrior prime, its enhanced carapace bearing the scars of previous engagements. We met them at the entrance to the chamber. Brother Valerius took the first gene stealer's charge, his knife finding the soft tissue beneath its jaw, but not before its talons ripped through his chest plate. He fell back, gravely wounded but still fighting. Brother Memnon engaged 2 more of the creatures, his augmented strength allowing him to physically tear a limb from one while stabbing the other. Apothecary Theseus and I focused on the warrior prime, recognizing that its synapse capabilities made it the greater threat. My knife struck at the juncture of its thorax plates while Theseus attacked from the flank, aiming for the creature's sensory organs. The warrior's bioplasma response caught Theseus in the leg, melting through armor and flesh. He stumbled but maintained his attack, driving his Narthesium's reductor into the Tyranid's eye socket. The battle devolved into a desperate melee. My armor's auto-senses failed completely, reducing my field of vision to what I could see through cracked helmet lenses. Power levels dropped to emergency reserves, making each movement a conscious effort against the weight of unpowered ceramite. Still, we fought on, Astarte's training and conditioning allowing us to function long past the point where unaugmented humans would have collapsed. Brother Valerius fell first, the gene stealer's talons severing his spine at the neck. Brother Memnon followed moments later, overwhelmed by three of the creatures attacking in concert. Apothecary Theseus continued fighting from a kneeling position, his injured leg unable to support his weight. He used his Narthesium as a weapon, the Medici tools designed to extract gene seed now employed to puncture tyrannid carapaces. The Warrior Prime focused its attention on me, recognizing my sergeant's markings even through the damage to my armor. Its talons struck with terrible precision, finding the weakened sections of my plate. Pain flared as one claw penetrated my abdomen, the wound deep but not immediately fatal thanks to my enhanced physiology. I drove my knife into the creature's throat, twisting the blade to maximize damage to its synaptic tissues. The Warrior Prime collapsed, its connection to the hive mind severed. The smaller organisms around it hesitated, momentarily directionless without synapse guidance. In that brief window, Librarian Anatius unleashed his final psychic attack, a focused telekinetic blast that threw the remaining gene stealers back into the corridor. The effort cost him dearly. Blood poured from his nose and eyes as vessels ruptured under the psychic strain. Three of us remained, the librarian, the apothecary, and myself. The beacon continued its transmission, power levels steady, the machine's spirit within the ancient technology performing its duty without complaint. Anatius staggered back to the control pedestal, using his force staff to remain upright. Theseus dragged himself toward the fallen brothers, determined to recover their gene seed even in these desperate circumstances. I maintained position at the chamber entrance, knife ready for the next wave. My enhanced hearing detected movement in the corridor, the distinctive sound of Hormigaunts advancing at speed. They would reach us within minutes. My body cataloged its injuries with Astarte's precision. Punctured primary lung, damaged kidney, multiple lacerations to major muscle groups. Survivable under normal circumstances, but with no medical supplies and continued combat inevitable, my operational effectiveness was severely compromised. Librarian Anatius called out from the pedestal. The beacon had established connection with an Imperial vessel, a Navy cruiser that had entered the system's outer reaches. Our transmission had been received and acknowledged. Help would come, though not for us. The cruiser's captain had confirmed implementation of Exterminatus protocols based on our data. Herodian IV would burn, but the Tyranid infestation would not spread to neighboring systems. The Hormigaunts reached the chamber entrance. I met them with methodical precision, each knife strike targeting vital organs or mobility centers. The creatures died by the dozen, their bodies piling up to create a barrier that slowed those behind them. My armor's power finally failed completely, leaving me fighting in what amounted to heavy, unpowered plate. Each movement became an exercise in raw physical strength. Librarian Anatius joined me at the entrance, his force staff striking with unpowered but still deadly force. His psychic abilities were exhausted, but his training as an Astartes remained. Together we held the line, two warriors of the Ultramarines standing against the endless tide of the hive mind's hunger. A ravena burrowed through the floor behind us, bypassing our defense. It struck at Apothecary Theseus, who had just finished extracting Brother Memnon's gene seed. The apothecary turned to face the new threat, his reductor piercing the creature's soft palate. The ravena's death throes caught Theseus in their violence, its talons disemboweling him even as it died. Two Astartes. The Hormigaunts continued their assault, joined now by a fresh warrior directing their efforts with terrible efficiency. Librarian Anatius took a talon through his primary heart, the wound fatal even for an Astartes. He continued fighting for 17 more seconds, his enhanced physiology allowing him one final act of defiance before death claimed him. I stood alone, the last of 100 Ultramarines who had made planetfall on Herodian IV. My knife had broken against the carapace of a particularly heavily armored Hormigaunt. I fought with gauntleted fists, ceramite striking chitin with bone-breaking force. The Tyranids pressed forward, their numbers seemingly endless, yet I continued to kill. Each organism that fell represented biomass denied to the hive mind, a small victory in a battle already lost. A lictor's talon found the gap between my gorget and helmet, penetrating deep into my neck. I felt arterial blood spraying from the wound, my enhanced healing unable to compensate for such massive damage. My vision dimmed as blood loss compromised even my Astartes physiology. I fell to one knee, then to both, still striking out at the Xenos around me. As consciousness began to fade, I reached for the compartment on Apothecary Theseus's armor containing the GeneSeed storage unit. My fingers closed around the reinforced container, securing it against my chest plate. The legacy of my brothers would not feed the hive mind's hunger. The Tyranids surrounded me, sensing my imminent death. Through failing vision, I counted the GeneSeed capsules one final time. 96 brothers, their genetic legacy preserved for future generations of Ultramarines. Their sacrifice would not be forgot. New battle brothers would rise from their GeneSeed, carrying forward the chapter's honor. In my final moments, I performed the Emperor's accounting. 100 Astartes had deployed to Herodian IV. 96 GeneSeed samples had been recovered. The chapter would endure as it had for 10,000 years. The knowledge brought a measure of peace as darkness closed in. The emergency beacon continued its transmission, a steady pulse of data that would guide the Emperor's vengeance to this world. The Tyranids might claim my flesh, but they would gain no victory here. Exterminatus would ensure that Herodian IV became their grave rather than their feeding ground. My final thought was not of failure, but of duty fulfilled. We had stood against the Xenos. We had sent warning. We had preserved the chapter's future.